Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Brian Lynn, and Dorothy Gundy. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, at least 138 people deported to El Salvador from the United States in recent years were later killed, a rights group claims in a new report. Human Rights Watch released the report on Wednesday. It comes as the U.S. government makes it harder for Central Americans to seek refuge in the United States. The report said that most of the deaths took place less than a year after the deportees returned to El Salvador, and some within days. The group also confirmed at least 70 cases of sexual assault or other attacks following their arrival in the country. The violence shows the risk faced by people who have been forced to return to their home country, noted Allison Leal Parker, the group's U.S. managing director. She said that U.S. law requires deportation of non-citizens who were tried and found guilty of a number of crimes. Trump administration policies also discourage those seeking asylum, she added. Our concern is that many of these people are facing a death sentence, Leal Parker said. Between 2014 and 2018, the U.S. government sent about 111,000 Salvadorans back to their homeland. El Salvador has long been struggling with the problem of gang violence. The United Nations reported last year that killings in El Salvador have decreased from a high of more than 6,000 in 2015. But the country still has one of the highest homicide rates in the world. A majority of those killings are linked to gangs. The number of Salvadorans seeking asylum in the United States grew by nearly 1,000% between 2012 and 2017. Many of those individuals reported being threatened by gangs. Only about 18% of asylum seekers are actually offered asylum. Human Rights Watch confirmed the 138 deaths noted in the report through official records and social media and by contacting family members. The group said it believes the actual number is much higher. The number of attacks is likely low also because of underreporting in the country of 6.5 million people. Cesar Rios is executive director of the Salvadoran Migration Institute, a non-governmental organization. He said, "No one in El Salvador follows the deaths of deportees, but that he found the information believable." He said, "It shows that many people are returning to communities controlled by gangs." Rios added, "We can say that deporting people to these areas is very difficult and dangerous." President Donald Trump has made immigration enforcement a centerpiece of his administration. It has a policy of forcing asylum seekers from Central America to wait in Mexico while their requests are considered or be sent back to their homelands if their claim is rejected.
The company Shoak Meats in Singapore aims to bring laboratory-grown shrimp to the food industry. Concerns about health, animals, and the environment are leading more people to remove meat from their diet. Plant-based meat alternatives, popularized by Beyond Meat Incorporated and Impossible Foods, increasingly appear in supermarkets and restaurants. But what some people call clean meat, meat grown from cells in a laboratory, is still an idea that is just beginning. More than 24 companies are testing lab-grown fish, beef, and chicken. These businesses hope to enter the alternative meat market, which could be worth $140 billion by 2029. That estimate comes from Barclays, a financial services company. Shoak Meats grows its product by taking shrimp cells and keeping them at a temperature of 28 degrees Celsius. They are then given nutrients in a solution. The cells become meat in 4 to 6 weeks. This lab-grown meat's price is high. 1 kilogram of it now costs $5,000, said Shoak Meats chief executive, Sandhya Sriram. At that cost, a single pork and shrimp dumpling could be as much as $300. Sriram, a vegetarian, hopes to cut the cost to $50 for 1 kilogram by the end of this year. She also hopes to sign a new low-cost deal for nutrients that help grow the shrimp cells. We are looking at next year, so we might be the first ever company to launch a cell-based meat product in the world, Sriram said. Shoak Meats still needs approval from the city-state's food regulator. Although people increasingly demand meat alternatives, cell-based meat companies still face resistance to their products. In Singapore, some people said they would try lab-grown meat. "I am willing to try," said 60-year-old Pet Lo while she shopped for shrimp in a Singapore market. "I may not exactly dare to eat it frequently, but I don't mind buying and trying it because the animals in the oceans are declining." Any alternative ways of making animal protein without harming the environment are positive, said Paul Tung, a specialist in agritechnology at Nanyang Technological University. But, he added, more studies are needed to understand any negative results of making cellular protein. I'm John Russell.
Health officials and technology businesses are attempting to fight misinformation about the new, fast-spreading coronavirus. Social media has been a major source of false information since the virus was first identified last month in Wuhan, China. This week, the World Health Organization, or WHO, said that worldwide reporting on the crisis had led to a massive infodemic. The organization noted an explosion of information that has made it difficult for people to find trustworthy sources and dependable guidance.
The misinformation included one claim on Facebook that drinking bleach can cure a coronavirus infection. Another stated, China's Communist Party will finally admit that the real source of the coronavirus is a lab in Wuhan linked to its covert biological weapon programs. Another report falsely claimed that vaccines for the virus had already been manufactured. Several reports on social media massively overestimated the number of deaths. One video receiving a lot of social media attention reportedly showed an infected man vomiting blood on a train.
Several fact-checking websites, such as Snopes, PolitiFact, and FactCheck.org, are investigating the many coronavirus claims and rating them as either true or false. Facebook said in a statement it was working to limit the spread of misinformation and harmful content and connecting people to helpful information. Facebook's head of health, Kangxing Jin, explained that the company was searching out information related to the virus and debunking false claims. When something is identified as false on Facebook or Instagram, he said, the company takes steps to limit its spread. Jin added that Facebook sends messages to its users who already shared or seek to share fact-checked content found to be false. The company is also working with WHO officials to increase the amount of truthful, official information about the virus. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is Director General of the WHO. This week, he recognized the anti-misinformation efforts of Facebook and other services, including Twitter, Tencent, and TikTok.
He also said that the WHO is working with Google to make sure people searching for information about coronavirus see WHO information at the top of their search results. Google announced it had activated one of its SOS alerts to help fight misinformation in search requests. The company uses the alert system to make emergency information more accessible during a natural or human-caused crisis. The system provides users of Google's search engine with special links to emergency information and the latest reports about the health crisis. The data comes from government sources, health organizations, and trusted media.
Google-owned YouTube said it was fighting misinformation by pushing official reports about the virus and trusted news sources to the top of its search results. On Twitter, people searching for information on the virus are shown a link that reads, "Know the Facts." The link directs users to the coronavirus website of the United States government's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Several users of the social media video service TikTok, which is popular among teenagers, claimed to have the virus and made false statements about it. TikTok has said it is attempting to limit such content. In a statement, the company said its user guidelines do not permit misinformation that could cause harm to our community or the larger public.
In some cases, medical doctors themselves are using social media services to fight misinformation. Rosemarie Leslie is a doctor at the University of Minnesota. She has shared personal videos on TikTok to debunk misinformation and provide actual facts about the coronavirus. The thing about TikTok as a platform is any video can go viral, whether or not somebody is giving out factual information, she told the Associated Press. In many cases, Leslie added, people sharing content do not say where it came from. My goal is to be able to give the facts in every single one of my videos, she said. By the end of last week, Leslie's videos had received more than 3 million views. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Larry West and Morris Joyce continue the story of President Woodrow Wilson and American involvement in World War I.
'18 was the final year of the most terrible war the world had ever known. But World War I did not end quickly or easily. The German army made a final effort to defeat the Allies. The United States had entered the conflict, and Germany wanted a victory before large numbers of American troops could get to Europe. Germany's effort became easier after it signed a peace treaty with the new Bolshevik government in Russia. The treaty made it possible for Germany to use all its forces against the Allies on its western border. In the end, however, Germany's plan failed. Allied troops pushed back the German attack in a series of bloody battles. The addition of American soldiers greatly increased Allied strength.
The leader of American forces in Europe was General John J. Pershing. General Pershing used a weapon new to the world of war, air power. Airplanes were used first, simply as eyes in the sky. They discovered enemy positions so ground artillery could fire at them. Then they were used as fighter planes. They carried guns to shoot down other planes. Finally, planes were built big enough to carry bombs. General Pershing also used another new weapon of war, tanks. He put these inventions together for his battle plan against Germany.
Pershing's target was the Argonne Forest. It was a tree-covered area Germany had held since 1914. The forest was protected by barbed wire and by defensive positions built of steel and concrete. It was the strongest part of the German line. It also was the most important part. If Argonne fell, Germany's final lines of defense would fall. The fighting in the Argonne Forest was fierce. Thousands of men died. Sometimes troops got lost because the forest was so thick with trees. But day by day, the Allies pushed the Germans back.
Germany's leaders were losing hope. In September 1918, they met with German ruler Kaiser Wilhelm. The army chief reported that the war was lost. Germany had no choice, he said. It must give back all the territory it had seized and try to negotiate a peace agreement. Other officials told the Kaiser that the situation at home was bad, too. People were starving. Revolutionaries were plotting to overthrow the government. Kaiser Wilhelm agreed it might be best to seek peace now, before Germany was destroyed completely. He asked his foreign secretary to send a secret message to American President Woodrow Wilson. The message would propose immediate negotiations to end the war.
President Wilson received it. He did not tell the other Allied leaders. Instead, he returned a message to Germany. Wilson asked if Germany was willing to accept the peace proposals he had offered many months earlier. Germany's chancellor answered that his government did accept the proposals. However, the events of war ended the secret exchange of messages between Germany and the United States. German submarines had increased attacks on Allied shipping. 2 passenger ships were sunk. 820 persons were killed. Many were women and children. President Wilson was shocked. He told Germany there could be no peace negotiations with such an inhuman enemy.
In late October 1918, Wilson sent a final message to Germany. He wanted a settlement that would make it impossible for Germany to fight again. Germany, Wilson said, must promise to withdraw its forces from all Allied territory. It also must close its weapons factories. Wilson added that the Allies would negotiate only with a government that truly represented the people of Germany, not with military rulers. The new German chancellor was Maximilian, Prince of Baden. Prince Max received President Wilson's message. He succeeded in getting Kaiser Wilhelm to dismiss the man responsible for German military policy. But he failed to get the Kaiser himself to give up power.
Not all Allied leaders supported President Wilson's plan to end World War I. They could not agree on some parts of it. Britain, for example, opposed the part about freedom of the seas. Britain said it would prevent the kind of naval blockade which had been so effective against Germany. France and Italy opposed the part about creating a new international organization. Wilson had called it a League of Nations. To solve these differences, Wilson sent his closest advisor to Europe to meet with Allied leaders. The discussions were long and sometimes bitter. Many of the Allies thought Wilson was being too kind to the defeated enemy. But in the end, they all agreed to accept the plan as a starting point for peace talks.
By this time, in early November, the situation in Germany was growing worse. Communists and socialists were calling for a rebellion. The Navy was ordered to go to sea. Sailors refused and killed some officers. Reports told of rebellion in parts of the German army, too. The nation's leaders had no choice. They would negotiate a peace treaty. On the morning of November 8th, a German delegation went to Allied military headquarters to discuss terms.
The Germans were met by the Supreme Allied Commander, Marshal Ferdinand Foch of France. Foch greeted them coldly, and he did not offer peace terms until they officially asked for a ceasefire. Germany, not the Allies, had to put down its weapons first. The Germans were shocked when they heard the terms. The list was severe. Among other things, Germany must withdraw its forces from all occupied territories. It must give up Alsace-Lorraine, a part of France it had held for almost 50 years. It must give up most of its weapons, including airplanes, submarines, and battleships. And it must turn over large numbers of trucks, railroad engines, and other supplies.
The German delegation said it could not sign such an agreement. Germany, it said, was not surrendering. It was only asking for a ceasefire. The delegation said it could not accept the peace terms without communicating with the government in Berlin. But the German government was falling apart. Kaiser Wilhelm had finally resigned and left the country. A new cabinet had been formed, and a new prime minister had declared a German republic. Yet the situation remained unsettled. Because of this, the German delegation negotiating with the Allies had to decide for itself. After much argument, the men agreed to the Allied terms. They signed the peace treaty. A ceasefire began a few hours later.
News that the shooting had stopped set off wild celebrations throughout the world. People danced in the streets. They cheered the end of the worst war in history. There were celebrations along the battle lines, too. But these were quiet. Soldiers from both sides climbed out of long trenches dug in the ground. They met the men who, a short while earlier, had been their deadly enemy. The bloody European conflict was over. The dispute, however, was not. Another fierce battle was ready to begin. This time, the battle would be among diplomats. The fight over the peace treaty, officially ending World War I, was about to begin.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
This is